Hey you guys, welcome back once again to Flickers of Fear, my movie review series. So probably like a lot of the movies that I end up watching and covering on this little series here, I can't remember exactly how I first heard about today's movie, which is called Super Dark Times, and it came out in 2017. Now this was an independent film. And it was actually the directorial debut of a cinematographer named Kevin Phillips. He had previously been a cinematographer. This is his first director's job. I think he's done a couple more since then, but I haven't seen either one of them. And this movie also, when it came out in 2017, it actually managed to get the H.R. Giger Award for Best Feature Film at the Neuchâtel, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, International Fantastic Film Festival in Switzerland back in 2017 or 2018, I believe it was. So it got like the best feature that year. Now, I think I heard about it probably. How I hear about a lot of the newer movies that I watch for the show, I probably saw it pop up on a couple of those, you know, best horror films on fill-in streaming service here lists and thought it sounded like pretty cool and right up my alley. So I finally got around to watching it. Incidentally, the screenplay for this was written by Ben Collins and Luke Piotrowski, and they also wrote another movie that I covered on here not too long ago, which was The Night House with Rebecca Hall. So this movie, it's less a straightforward horror film, I feel like, and it's more kind of like a grim sort of like coming of age psychological thriller. But that said, this movie is actually a very, very assured first feature. It's very, very tension filled. It's just very bleak. It's very unsettling. And it's just kind of like looking into, I guess, like teenagers and like the aftermath of a tragedy. So I've seen it compared to movies like Mean Creek, which I think had Rory Culkin in it, River's Edge, Donnie Darko, Stand By Me. So like those kind of movies, those are actually really good comparisons to this because this is a very similar kind of, you know, ballpark as those. I mean, it has this kind of like, I don't know, I guess I would call it like maybe like a poisonous nostalgia type of thing about sort of the dark side of teenage lives and relationships and stuff like that, like prior to the internet era. So the movie actually opens up on a really brilliant and really chilling scene, which actually doesn't have anything specifically to do with the events in the movie that follow, but it actually kind of foreshadows and it sets up this really uneasy mood, so I really liked it. So at the beginning of the movie, we close in on this like almost like sort of deserted looking school building, and it has like one broken window. And then you go inside and like all the papers are kind of blowing around. There's nobody in the classroom at first. But the classroom's all disordered and like the desks are all askew. And then you see that there's like blood all over the floor. Now it turns out, like as this scene goes on, that what has happened is that a deer has crashed through the window and is laying on the floor, like in the process of dying. And at that point, like the cops come in and they don't seem to be like entirely sure like what to do about it. And then one of the cops comes in and just kind of almost like angrily like stomps the deer to death, like to put it out of its misery, like while one of the students like out in the hall like looks on with horror. So like I said, this doesn't have anything directly to do, but it's just kind of like a foreshadowing moment, and I thought it was like really well done. So from there, we kind of move into the story proper. Now, this is set in the early to mid 1990s. I mean, so like Bill Clinton was on the TV and was president at some point. So I guess it had to be like post 1992. And it appears to be, I believe it was shot in the Hudson Valley in upstate New York. So Super Dark Times, we're following two best friends. One of them is named Zach. He's kind of like the main character. And he's actually played by Owen Campbell, who I recently saw in another couple of movies that I covered. He was in My Heart Can't Beat Unless You Tell It To from 2020. And also in X, the Ty West movie from 2021. I think he had a small part in that as well. So he plays Zach. And then the other kid is named Josh. And he's actually played by Charlie Tahan, I think is how you pronounce his last name. If that's not right, I apologize. He actually started out as a kid actor. I think he was in I Am Legend, like the 2007 one. And he's also on the TV series Ozark. He's on like a bunch of like different TV series and movies and stuff like that. So for the first bit of the movie, I don't even remember how long it was, like maybe the first 15, 20 minutes, maybe not that long. I can't really, I don't really remember. But for the first part of the movie, we're just kind of like hanging out with these two teenage boys, like establishing their characters, establishing their relationship, like their world or whatever. And we're hanging out with them and they're doing like what teenage boys did in the 1990s. Like I said, before there was internet, you know, they're trying to look at scrambled porn on the TV. They're playing Minesweeper like on the old like compact computers or whatever. I was like, oh man, I remember that. Kind of like going through their yearbooks and like lusting over pictures of their female classmates and like talking shit about like all the stuff that they would do to each one of them and all this other kind of stuff, riding bikes around the neighborhood a la Stranger Things and things like that. So all that, just talking shit to one another like teenage boys do. I will say too that the acting in this is superb. Having been a high school student myself in the late 1980s, so I would have been like a couple years older than, you know, the kids in this movie would have been in the context of this movie. And I can tell you that this is like pretty much absolutely what teenage boys did, like their activities, like before there was an internet, and the way that they talked to one another. It was just eerily spot on. Plus, I have like two younger brothers as well. And so the acting in this is just so naturalistic that I found it really difficult to believe that these actors, I checked, weren't even born when this movie was supposed to be set, which really blows my mind. I mean, they did a great, great job. So this being, like I said, the early to mid 90s, so this is way before cell phones, kind of before real structured like after school activities, before like helicopter parenting really became a thing. So at this stage, much like in the 80s, you know, these boys and their classmates are kind of like left to their own devices. Like their parents, a lot of them, you know, most of them are latchkey kids, their parents work, so their parents don't usually get home until after dark. So they get home from school and then they're just kind of like farting around. They can pretty much do whatever they want for several hours. And when the parents are there, they're not neglectful. Like none of the parents in this seem like neglectful or, you know, terrible parents or anything really, other than like a couple hints, like for some side characters, but they just kind of like, you know, they're not just hovering over the kids all the time. They're just kind of like, you know, at one point, like Zach's mom, she appears to be a single mother, and Zach's mom just kind of like lets this girl that he likes come over, and they just go back like down in his room and stuff like that, and she's just like, hey, she's kind of cute, you know what I mean? She's not like hovering, like seeing what they're doing. So it's all that kind of thing. Now the thing about this though is that that could end up being a good thing or a bad thing, like depending on your perspective. I mean, obviously the teenagers are into it because they like, you know, they have a lot of unstructured time where they can just do whatever they want. But, you know, on the flip side of that, there's also a lot of room where they're not supervised and they can get into a lot of trouble, which is what happens in this movie. So I will say, too, that it seems very relevant. And I think if I'm not, because I did read some other kind of like interviews and some other reviews of this, and I think that it was brought up either maybe by the filmmakers or whatever, but they didn't set this in the early 90s just to be like, just to ride on the nostalgia train. They're like, we wanted to kind of convey this story in the time before, particularly the Columbine massacre, like, which I kind of feel like changed the way that certain types of teenage behaviors were seen, not only by the authority figures in their lives, but also like by society as a whole. So I kind of feel like it's probably relevant that it was set before that. And interestingly, too, I think one of the things that really contributes to the sort of mood of this movie, which I really got into, was that the town itself, where these boys live, it appears like kind of a small town and kind of economically depressed. Like, it seems like a lot of the buildings are maybe, like, abandoned, or there's, like, you know, high crime or something like that. Like, there's a lot of graffiti and things of that nature. And also, when they're going around doing things, the town looks empty, like, most of the time. Like, you don't really see, like, other people really, like walking around or driving around or anything like that. So it gives the movie this real kind of like desolate, like almost a post-apocalyptic kind of feel, like almost. It doesn't go that, it's not, you know, that much out there, but just the fact that they walk around in these like empty streets and stuff. And I think it really gives a good, it really conveys the sense that these kids are like completely alone and cut off, not only from like their parents and their teachers and things like that, but also from maybe like the wider world at large. So while Zach and Josh are frittering away an afternoon one day by riding bikes and, you know, going to the convenience store and buying snacks and, you know, just shooting the shit like teenage boys do, they happen to meet up with this kid. They seem to like sort of know him. His name's Daryl, and I guess he's sort of like an unpopular kid at school. Like everybody just thinks he's kind of like a dork or a loser or whatever. And but Daryl is hanging out there with his friend Charlie, who is younger. He's like in middle school. I think he's like an eighth grader or something like that. So I guess that kind of like cements like Daryl's like loser status because he's hanging out with like younger kids. Now, while they're all hanging out, Josh, who I guess he kind of wants to like show off a bit, so he takes the kids like back to his house and lets them into his older brother's room. Now, his older brother is like away in the Marines and has been away for like a year or something like that. Now, the room is like a teenage boy's fantasy. You know what I mean? There's like pinups and like porn like stuck all over the walls and the ceiling and stuff like that. There's a bunch of weed the guy left behind, like a pretty significant amount of weed. I was like, holy crap, why would he leave that behind? But yeah, so he left that behind. And most significantly, there's a nice sharp katana, which belongs to the brother. Now, Daryl wants to smoke the weed, but Josh gets really mad and he's like, hey, that belongs to my brother. Like, you don't have any right to take it. And he's just like, yeah, he won't be coming back for it. Like, he's been gone a long time. Blah, blah, blah. They have a kind of argument, but then Daryl's just kind of like, okay, fine, whatever, man. It's your weed, it's your brother. So, what they decide to do, though, is they decide to take the katana and decide that they're going to go fuck around with it. So, they go kind of out to this empty field and they're going to slice milk cartons open. And, you know, they're just kind of like quarreling about stupid teenage boy shit, like about girls and about superheroes and all that kind of stuff. However, a problem soon arises when they discover that Daryl absolutely stole all the weed from Josh's brother's bedroom and is like sitting there smoking it like a dumbass. I think we're meant to assume, like, he doesn't seem like he's, I don't know, like, Daryl seems like maybe he's not slow necessarily, but maybe not the sharpest tool in the shed. You know what I mean? I don't want to, like, overstate that, but because he obviously stole all this weed and then he just sits there in full view of everybody, like, smoking it, and he's just, no, no, it's just a regular cigarette. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not going to fly. But anyway, so he starts smoking it, and obviously, like, Josh gets really mad because he's like, hey, I told you not to take that. So they get into this really big heat argument, which ends with Josh kind of accidentally stabbing Daryl in the throat with the katana. Now, the boys all understandably freak out and try to kind of stem the tide of blood that's coming out of this kid's neck. And they wig out even more, as you would, when Daryl, who seems to be running, like, purely on adrenaline at this point, like, actually gets up, like, gets onto his feet and, like, runs off into the woods. So they chase him, obviously, but by the time they catch up to him, Daryl has bled out and is just laying there dead on the forest floor. So the three other boys are like, what the fuck do we do now? They're completely panicked. So they're like, well, you know, no one's going to believe this is an accident. What are we going to do? So they decide, well, we're going to hide the body and the sword. And now we're going to like pretend that we have no idea what happened and no idea where this kid went to. Because like I said, they sort of knew each other, like they went to the same school, but they didn't like hang out together. So it wouldn't like be really obvious that, you know, they didn't usually hang out with that kid. So it wouldn't be really obvious that like people were like, hey, where'd that kid go? So from that point in the movie onward, sort of like the friendship between Josh and Zach starts crumbling, I guess, as each of them is just trying to deal with this secret in their own way. And like I said, the other kid, Charlie, neither of them really knew him either. And he's like younger, so he doesn't go to the same school as them. So he's just kind of like, whatever, like we're not friends and like stop talking to me. So he just kind of like goes and does his own thing. Now, Zach, who seems to be like more of an empathetic person, he's actually like consumed by guilt. He's thinking about, oh my God, like Daryl's mother must be worried sick about him. And it's like, you know, everybody thinks the kid is just missing because obviously they haven't found the body. And he's like, but I know where he is and I know what happened to him. And it's like eating him up inside that he can't tell anybody about it. And so he's almost kind of like tempted. I don't think that he necessarily wants to report it. He never says that, but he does say a couple of times that that they should go back to the spot where they left the body and like check on it or, you know, or do something. You know, he seems like he wants to do something about it, which I think maybe is like a low key way that maybe he wants to get caught so he doesn't have to worry about it anymore. He's also really conflicted by the fact, because this is another little side plot, that this girl that he's like totally in love with, whose name is Allison, has kind of like started flirting back and like returning his feelings. Hey, I really like you and stuff like that too. And he's still a teenage boy, so he really, really wants to pursue this. But obviously he has this horrible, horrific secret that's just like eating him up and killing him inside. And he's just too emotionally distraught to return the feelings as much as he wants to, and, you know, he really wants to tell her, like, why he's being that way, but he can't because he'll get in trouble. Now, Josh, on the other hand, who was more directly responsible for the kid dying, actually locks himself away in his room for several days, like, telling his mom that he's really sick, but then when he comes back out of his room, like, when he emerges and goes back to school, he sort of acts like nothing happened. Like, that's kind of how he's dealing with it. He's just like, yeah, whatever, and he's just like acting all cool and everything, but he does seem to be like lashing out or like acting out in ways that he didn't really before. Like, he's getting in trouble at school, like he calls his teacher like a cunt and stuff like that, which he wouldn't have done before because he was more of a quiet kid. So that's kind of how his stress is coming out in that way, and he's just generally acting sort of off. So obviously, like, him, like, Zach and Josh aren't really talking that much anymore because they're dealing with this with what happened in like such a different way, and they can't really communicate. And so, but Zach starts to get really worried when another classmate of theirs, who Josh absolutely despised, turns up dead also, like in an apparent accident or suicide. And Zach starts to suspect that maybe Josh had something to do with it. So, as I mentioned, this is actually way more like a dark thriller about teenage relationships and murder than a traditional horror film, but I actually think that certain types of horror fans will probably really dig it. Like I said, especially if you like stuff like Donnie Darko or Stand By Me or River's Edge or something like that, which, like I said, are not necessarily horror films, but they have, like, real dark themes to them. So I think if you liked those, you would probably like this as well. Like I said, it has that kind of, like, dark nostalgia kind of deal to it as well, and it has, like, this real ominous vibe to it that makes you, like, the whole time you're watching it, you just feel like things could spiral out of control, like, at any minute, because you're not really sure what exactly is going to happen, like, how this is all going to play out. So, I mean, the acting is impeccable. Like I said, it's very, very naturalistic, and it really kind of evoked that era for me, because I was like, yeah, I remember, like, teenage boys acting like that and talking like that. The cinematography is beautiful, even though it's very, very forbidding. Like I said, it's almost kind of, like, almost post-apocalyptic, like, the way that it's shot. And I will give a special shout-out here, too, to the score and also, like, the musical choices, like, the songs they used. There's songs by Black Flag, Bad Religion, Wire, the ComSat Angels, I think PM Dawn was in there, stuff like that. And it really set this kind of, like, somber but also kind of, like, real anxiety inducing like mood, and it really, really took me back to that time, because, like I said, 90s, 92, something like that, I was just out of high school, like, I was in college at that time, so this era is, like, really high up in my mind, so I was kind of, like, just a little bit older than these kids would have been, so there was, like, a lot that I could relate to from this. But yeah, this is a really, really good one. If you really, really like kind of, like, dark dramas, especially about, you know, fucked up stuff happening to, like, teenagers, then I would definitely recommend it to anybody that was into that kind of stuff. I really, really enjoyed it. So if you've seen it, like, let me know what you thought about it in the comments. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you again on the next one. Bye.